Coming to you from the Forge of Freedom studio in the heart of America, a podcast dedicated to preserving freedom and inspiring personal success. Freedom is born and lives through you, the individual, and it dies in the shadows of tyranny, motivating our listeners to become well-rounded, freedom-minded people with the body of an athlete, the mind of a stoic, and the spirit of a warrior. The Tree of Liberty lives on through you, the Forge of Freedom. And now here's your host, Alex Uli.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Forge of Freedom podcast. I'm your host, Alex Uli, and this is episode 81 of the Forge of Freedom. So it's been a little bit since I uploaded an episode. I mentioned in episode 80 about gratitude that I'd be taking a break for a little while. In fact, my wife and I just returned from a trip to China for a wedding. A good friend of mine recently got married, and we traveled to Beijing, China, to attend his wedding and to travel a little bit. And I took quite a few notes on that trip, and I've got some thoughts that I think I'll share as an episode, sort of a reflection on our trip to China and thoughts about freedom related to that trip and that experience that we had in China. I'd been once before in 2017, but I think maybe it hit me a little different this time. Maybe things had changed slightly since the pandemic. So I'm sort of formulating an episode in my mind based on my thoughts from that trip, and I look forward to sharing that with you sometime soon. But for today, I want to talk about a little bit about what's going on in Oregon. This caught my attention a few weeks ago in the news recently. Oregon's been in the news recently with respect to their decriminalization of drugs, and specifically Measure 110 that they passed a few years ago. For those of you who don't know, in November of 2020, Oregon approved Measure 110, which was an initiative that decriminalized the personal possession of small quantities of all drugs, including substances like cocaine, heroin, LSD, methamphetamine, and oxycodone. And Oregon really stands alone as the only U.S. state to enact such policy. Now, I've mentioned in a previous episode the example of Portugal, but as far as U.S. states go, Oregon is really alone in this. And as of February 1st, 2021, minor drug possession in Oregon became a civil infraction, resulting in a $100 fine and a citation for violators. And the fine can be waived by engaging with a hotline aimed at screening for substance use disorder. And despite being hailed as a progressive move, Measure 110 has faced intense criticism in the years since its passed and since its implementation. And detractors or critics argue that it's ineffective or even detrimental, asserting that the illicit drug market continues to thrive. And candidates, particularly from the Republican side of the political spectrum, are advocating for the repeal of Measure 110. And this came to my attention, actually, it was my father who brought it up. But I also saw various articles circulating on the internet, including a clip from Fox News and an article, which is a blurb from a former prosecutor. And I want to share those with you real quickly before I get further into the discussion here. As all of you know, if you've been listening to the channel for any time at all, I have a very strong opinion with respect to the war on drugs. Being an attorney, a criminal defense attorney, in particular, I see this day-to-day in my daily work. And I see the impact that the war on drugs has, the terrible impact that it has, and the ineffective policies of the last 50 years. So this is something that really catches my attention. But I want to share this video clip as well as this short blurb from a former prosecutor. So I'm going to get my screen share going here. And the video starts out, critics blasting Oregon's experiment with drug decriminalization. And I'm going to pick up here. Gutfield has been advocating for he's been defending the policy of decriminalization and legalization, which there's a distinction there that I'll talk about here in a little bit. But then Jesse Waters chimes in here. And I think it's a common sentiment that I want you to hear, and I want to address on the podcast here as well. So here we go. Just a little bit here I want to share.
Goes away, we save hundreds of thousands of lives. That's my
opinion.
That's all I have to say.
I am not buying this libertarian mumbo jumbo.
What? It's called
this
facts.
Is a perfect example of libertarianism gone wrong. Greg has been singing this song ever since I came on the Five. Legalize drugs, decriminalize it. They did it. Oregon, listen to Gutfeld.
That's not what.
Now look at Oregon. Everyone's dead.
That's what happens
when you listen to Greg. You die.
No.
Look what happened.
Look at these people.
They're on the streets.
They're ejecting not just fentanyl,
Greg. It's heroin.
So there you go. I just wanted to share that with you because it's a typical sort of presentation of the issues. You can see at the bottom there. It says decriminalization disaster, and the. It's changed there a little bit, but it says basically that overdose deaths spike after blue state decriminalized drugs, devastating consequences. So it's fear, propaganda. So that's enough of that video. But the next thing I want to share with you is this little blurb from a former prosecutor that I read recently, and the subtitle, it's a blog post, and it's got multiple topics that he hits on here, and the subtitle within the post is More Crime. It says, 3 years ago, Oregon voters legalized drugs through a referendum. This included not just marijuana, but heroin, methamphetamine, and cocaine. Predictably, drug overdose deaths have increased by 300% since the law passed. So far this year, 955 Oregonians have died from drug overdose. A majority of Oregon citizens now support recriminalizing drugs. Sometimes people must learn the hard way. All right, first of all, I did a little digging on this, and I wasn't able to find this 300% increase since the law passed anywhere. And of course, the article doesn't cite any data to support the assertion. What I did find, though, was that drug overdoses were up by 39% in the year after the decriminalization took effect, and they were up 34% the year before decriminalization took effect. So to say that it's gone up 300% since the law passed, I think, is just completely wrong. And then to suggest that it's gotten a lot worse, it's very bad, no doubt. But it's bad everywhere. And it's particularly bad in Oregon, but it's terrible everywhere. And one thing that I want to say is that it's a quote. I think that the sentiment holds true, especially in this discussion. Those who would trade their freedom for the illusion of security deserve neither. And I've added the illusion in there. But that's a Benjamin Franklin quote. But the idea is that the government here, in an effort to gain more control, more power, pushes fear, pushes propaganda, disaster, devastation, death, all in an effort to get more power back in the hands of government. Now, in Oregon, I'll say they have taken an approach that I don't particularly agree with. They have simply shifted resources. They've decided we're not going to criminalize this. We're going to provide treatment options. So they've eliminated sort of the prison industrial complex and inserted the rehab industrial complex in its place. So rather than giving up the government money, the government resources that they've stolen from the taxpayers, they're simply shifting them rather than giving them back. Now, there may be some savings. I don't know. I haven't seen the economic calculus there. So while I applaud them stepping in the right direction, they haven't gone far enough. And that gets me to my next point. The primary shortcoming of Measure 110 lies in its limited scope. Although it eliminated severe penalties for personal drug use, which is great, it did not legalize production and the sale of drugs. Manufacturing or distributing drugs such as heroin remains a felony punishable by up to 20 years in prison, a $100,000 fine, and an additional penalty equivalent to twice the financial gain from the illicit activity. And this is an extremely important point. One of the things about the war on drugs that's been waging for 50 years now, and of course, I'll go back to the article by the prosecutor. It says 3 years ago, and it goes on to criticize the policy in Oregon, and it says, sometimes people must learn the hard way. After these predictable results, according to this former prosecutor. But what does this person have to say about the last 50 years of failed drug war policies, of the increased crime, of the increased death, of the increased dangerousness of the drugs, of the gangs that have cropped up around the black market in drugs created by drug criminalization? Because here's the thing. Anytime you make a product illegal, you are not going to eliminate that product. You won't do it. You drive the product and you drive the people who desire to consume that product to a black market. And black markets are run by gangs. Black markets are run by cartels. Black markets are run by mobs. Think about, this is a common example that I use. Think about prohibition of alcohol. You had the likes of Al Capone, Bugs Moran. You had these people who, made their living by running cartels, by running gangs, by running mobs around the black market and alcohol. When alcohol prohibition was repealed, those gangs disappeared. They had no market in illegal alcohol anymore. And the other thing is that they weren't, when alcohol was prohibited, they weren't peddling beer. They were peddling the most potent products they could peddle because they had to get as much of it across the border as possible in as little quantity as possible. So they had to make it stronger. They had to make it more potent. And it was unregulated. It was more dangerous. And the market for it was extremely violent. It's the same thing we have today. The El Chapos of the world, the Medellin cartels of the world, they would disappear if we legalized drugs, not decriminalized. Decriminalized, there's still some punishment. It's just not a criminal punishment. It's an infraction. It's a civil punishment. And so it doesn't make the drug legal. So there's still a black market. And like this article, or like here in Oregon, the dealing, the sale of this product is still criminalized. So there's still a black market for the product, which means the product itself is still dangerous. It's still unregulated. You don't have any remedy if you buy it. You can't take the producer to court. And the people who sell it are still engaged in an illegal, violent, and dangerous business. If we legalized it, it would immediately put them out of business. Now, would there be some residual effects from legalization, at least in the short term? Absolutely. people would likely consume the products that were still available from the black market until legal, safer alternatives became available on the free market. But that would be a short-term spike, and it would be a tragic spike, but it would be short-term. And it's unlikely that it would be much worse than what we're currently seeing. So they don't like the results of the half measures that Oregon has taken. They say predictably. And I'd say, yeah, I guess it was predictable because they didn't go far enough. But they're blind to the last 50 years of failed policies, of failed incarceration, of failed waste of trillions of dollars. That it's estimated that the government has spent well in excess of $1 trillion to date fighting the war on drugs, and is spending well in excess of $40 billion a year going forward, and that continues to increase every year. So we've spent billions, trillions now of taxpayer money fighting this war for nothing, to make it worse, to make the products that people are going to consume, no matter what the law is, more dangerous, to create and prop up these cartels, to militarize our police, to distract our police from real crimes where there is a direct victim. I mean, let's face it, police have a hard job, an impossible job sometimes. But it's rare that they can protect us from other people. There is no way they can protect someone from themselves. So police should be more focused on crimes where there's somebody else who's a victim, a battery, a rape, an assault, a murder, etc. We've lost many of our liberties. Our Fourth Amendment has essentially been gutted, largely because of the outgrowth of the war on drugs. Police have been turned against their own, the people they're supposed to be protecting. I mean, think about all the situations where police are brought into contact with people unnecessarily because they're trying to enforce the war on drugs. They break into homes and get shot because they've broken into the wrong place. They have an encounter in a vehicle, and that goes wayward for one reason or another. All these encounters raise the risk that the person will be hurt and that the officer will be hurt, and legalizing drugs would limit those terrible outcomes. So we have all these things that are just ignored by Jesse Waters, by the former prosecutor, and they say, oh, this 3 years of half measures by Oregon is obviously not going to work, so let's go right back to what we've been doing for the last 50 years that hasn't worked. And I think that's just insane. The other thing, and I've talked about this in a different context before, is that we incarcerate more people by far than anywhere, any other country in the world, by far. And a huge proportion of that jail population is people who are in jail for drug use, drug possession, or drug dealing, a drug-related crime. It doesn't make sense to me that we should pay as taxpayers for drug users, drug dealers to be in jail when we're paying via taxpayer dollars to police these crimes, these drug crimes. So we're being punished in that way by using up our tax dollars. We're paying to incarcerate the person. And then once they've finished their term of incarceration, they've got a felony record, they can't get a job, and they're more likely, after they've gotten out of jail, to overdose by a significant margin than before they'd gone to jail in the first place or to prison. So we're being punished as taxpayers in multiple ways for a terrible result. And I think that's just really irrational and obscene. Critics of Measure 110 also tend to point to an increase in homicide and drug overdose rates after the implementation of Measure 110. But like I said, attributing these increases solely, well, first of all, these increases are wildly overstated, but attributing them to these increases, attributing these increases solely to the measure overlooks the fact that the black market was not curtailed and rates were already rising in the previous years. If you look at the charts, the rates were rising way before 2020 and 2021. If you go back to 2016, I think the statistic is that the overdose deaths since 2016 had gone up 400% in the years since 2016. And a huge portion of that was between 2016 and 2020. It wasn't all after 2020. Here's just a few examples. For instance, in Portland experienced a 54.4% increase in homicides in 2021 compared to 2020, with some attributing the rise to turf wars between drug gangs. However, homicides had already increased by 58% from 2019 to 2020. Drug overdose deaths in Oregon increased by 39% the year after Measure 110, but a similar increase occurred in the year prior to the implementation of Measure 110. And of course, those numbers prior to the implementation are simply ignored. So while some argue that Measure 110 has increased the drug demand in Oregon, evidence suggests that prohibition has only a minor impact on demand due to enforcement challenges. Nonetheless, if demand has risen while the supply remains illegal, the harms of prohibition may persist or worsen. And this is that's the key distinction here between decriminalization and legalization. Proponents of Measure 110 drew inspiration from Portugal's 2001 decriminalization law, which significantly reduced the country's drug death rate. However, critics argue that Portugal's success was the result of careful planning and resource allocation over several years. In Portugal, a decade of focusing on treatment over punishment preceded the 2001 law, and the significant impact of the law was evident in reduced sentences for drug traffickers, with a 40% decrease in convictions and nearly a 50% reduction in incarceration over the following decade. So despite the positive aspects of Measure 110, such as a reduction in arrests by 5,400 within 10 months of decriminalization, there is room for significant improvement. The Oregon Criminal Justice Commission estimates that decriminalization will address disparities in enforcement and arrests and convictions, providing more equitable outcomes. But that's not really my primary problem with the law. It's that it doesn't go far enough. It still maintains the condition in which the black market exists, which is what is so dangerous about the war on drugs, is that it props up the black market with the more dangerous drugs and the gangs that support the market. To truly enhance its drug policy, Oregon does not need to return to criminalization of drugs. Oregon should consider legalization not only of possession, but of manufacturing, distribution, and sale, going far beyond the decriminalization of personal use. Only then would the black market be eliminated, and only then would the law be consistent with the moral principle of self-ownership. What business does the government have dictating what you or I can consume? my body is my own body, and I have a superior claim. I have a property right, a superior claim in my own body as compared to every other human being, including the government. The only entity with a superior claim to my body is God, no other human. And government dictating what I can or cannot do with my own body, even if it causes me harm, goes beyond the bounds of the appropriate role of government. It goes beyond the bounds of the Constitution. There is no constitutional authority for the war on drugs. And it goes beyond consistent application of moral principles. And let's face it, I've got here a pocket constitution. This constitution, you can see, is just very few pages if you're watching by video. This is what we say the government has the authority to do. Think about that. And think about all of the laws that would fill warehouse upon warehouse if you printed it all out that we have to abide by. These are our guidelines for the government. It's supposed to be a limited government, a government for the people, by the people. And look what we've got. A monstrosity just around the war on drugs, let alone all of the other misguided policies and programs. All right, so I hope you enjoyed the discussion. Like I said, this is something that's been on my mind because I've seen it in the news recently. I undoubtedly will return to a discussion of the war on drugs on many occasions in the future. It's something that I'm passionate about. I think it's something that most people underestimate the devastating impact that it has on our society. It tears apart at the fabric of our communities, and it costs billions and trillions of taxpayer dollars. So I hope, like I said, I hope you enjoyed the discussion. If you did, don't forget to like and subscribe to help us spread the message of freedom. That I'll be back on with some thoughts about our trip to China, just sort of reflect on freedom and on that trip. Of course, I'll be back out on Monday with an episode for Monday Gun Day. Until then, remember, you are the Forge of Freedom.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Forge of Freedom. Be sure to subscribe wherever you heard this podcast so you never miss a future episode. For more information or to connect with Alex, you can go to forgeoffreedom.com or follow him on Twitter at Forge of Freedom. Until next time, remember, you are the Forge of Freedom.